Now it's finally official. Pope Benedict is to visit Britain from the 16th to the 19th of September, the first ever state visit of a pope to the United Kingdom. The long-awaited news was released at a joint press conference in London on Tuesday by a top government minister and the heads of the Catholic Bishops' Conferences of England and Wales and Scotland, Archbishop Vincent Nicholls and Cardinal Keith O'Brien. Earlier that same day, Buckingham Palace also issued an official invitation from Queen Elizabeth II. And the news was warmly welcomed by the Archbishop of Canterbury, Dr. Rowan Williams. A joint statement from the government and the Catholic Church announced the Pope will visit Edinburgh, Glasgow, London, Coventry and Birmingham. Highlights of the journey will be the beatification of the 19th century theologian, Cardinal John Henry Newman, and a major speech to British civil society at Westminster Hall in London. The Pope will be received by the Queen at the Palace of Holyrood House, her official residence in Scotland, and he will visit the Archbishop of Canterbury at his headquarters in Lambeth Palace on the south bank of the River Thames. Other key events will include a Mass in Glasgow, a prayer vigil in London, and an ecumenical encounter in Westminster Abbey.
The Catholic Church plays, of course, its full role in the ecumenical movement here.
Cardinal Keith O'Brien, who is Archbishop of Edinburgh and St Andrews, tells us more about the kind of Catholic Church Pope Benedict will find when he touches down on Scottish soil in September.
Yes, well, here in Scotland, in the whole country, we have a population of less than 5 million. And of those 5 million, perhaps about 750,000 are Catholics. Not all, of course, are practicing Catholics, but they're scattered throughout the length and breadth of Scotland, mainly concentrated on the central belt, more in the west of Scotland than in the east of Scotland. But when I say central belt, that belt which goes between Glasgow and Edinburgh. They're about 45 miles apart. But there is that cultural divide between, well, Edinburgh is the capital city. Glasgow received great influx of Irish immigrants over the years, and consequently that's why it has a higher proportion of Catholics. And basically, as you go from west to east, the percentage of the Catholics decrease from about some areas 1 in 3 to about 1 in 10.
You've also got a lot of islands, haven't you, scattered around the coast, and that presents a huge challenge, doesn't it?
It does, for the bishops in these areas just getting about. But the islands in the west coast of Scotland are strong in the faith. Many of them were untouched at the time of the Protestant Reformation, and of course they're almost 100% Catholic. So again, that helps solve some of the problems, but increases the difficulties in the bishops having regular contact with their people out there.
Now, Scotland has also seen a huge influx of immigrants, many of them from other Catholic countries, Poland, South America, the Philippines. How has that altered the face of the church, and what challenges does it present?
Yes, well, it has boosted our faith. I think we've been in great admiration for the immigrants from the former Eastern Europe, particularly the Polish people. And we already have had here in the east of Scotland a number of Polish priests already ministering in our parishes, like the Palatine Fathers in particular. And since the latest influx, Salvatorian Fathers have come as well. And then a number of priests released from their own diocese to work with the immigrants. And consequently, in Scotland itself, there must be about 25 priests, Polish priests, ministering to the new influx of Polish people who are here. We have a Filipino priest in our cathedral, and there are 5 priests of the Syro-Malabar Rite, the Indian Rite, looking after our Indian communities. So I think that's one of the ways in which we've faced the problem, and it's helped having these priests willing to come from their home countries. Just as some decades ago, when there was a great immigration of Italian people or Irish people, well, priests came from Italy and Ireland to help them.
Now, historically, Scotland suffered from bitter sectarian divisions between Catholics and Protestants. How much, first of all, has that been really overcome today?
Well, one might say that there is still a certain sectarianism visible in Scotland, particularly perhaps in the west of Scotland rather than the east of Scotland. The Catholic community when they grew in numbers, had basically been working class. But of course, they've worked their way up through literally every profession now, and consequently far more respected than ever before in our country. The Catholic Church plays, of course, its full role in the ecumenical movement here in Scotland. We're full members of what we call ACTS, A-C-T-S, Action of Churches Together in Scotland, play a leading role in that. So I think the sectarianism still is evident from time to time, but not in the horrible way in which it once was.
What about interfaith dialogue? Is this a priority for the church there in Scotland today?
I wouldn't say it's the great priority because of the relatively small proportions of peoples of other faiths coming into Scotland. It's not in the same proportion as with regard to the Presbyterian Church of Scotland or the Scottish Episcopal Church, the church in full communion with the Anglican Church. But we do have good relations with those of other faiths. We have a national interfaith council and so on, bringing us together, commemorating feast days and working together on matters of social care, social concern. And I think that's one of the basic ways in which we do grow together when we realise the common problems round about us at this present time socially and work together to try to eradicate the problems as best we can.
Now, how has the recent recession affected the people of Scotland, especially in the inner city areas which already suffered from severe economic and social difficulties? And what is the church, above all, trying to do to support them?
Well, I think we must never forget the role of what we might call our own traditional societies, the St. Vincent de Paul Society and the various other charities like that at grassroots level. We have, obviously, through our religious orders or congregations, the Mother Teresa, Nuns of Jericho, Benedictines, the Sisters of Mercy, houses and homes available for food, respite and so on, working together with the state and what is being provided with the state as well. That's trying to solve something of the problem, but I think we've also got to work together as Christians in our communities, as Catholics in our communities, bringing proper pressure to bear on the local authorities and on our government here in Scotland, as well as the national government in Westminster, so that we get to the roots of the problem of recession, of homelessness, of people just being hungry round about us. As a Christian body, we've got to help our politicians just to realise what is going on at grassroots level in some of the poorer areas of our communities, particularly, as you indicate, in our larger towns or in the cities. And again, that's another opportunity for ecumenical work together or interfaith work together.
Relations between the different Christian churches in the UK will be an important theme of the Pope's visit in September, as will the question of interfaith dialogue in the multicultural context of many English towns and cities. Looking ahead to the visit, Archbishop Vincent Nicholls of Westminster stresses it will have a historic significance for all people of Britain today.
This is a deeply significant moment for the country as a whole and, of course, for the Catholic community. And I hope it will show the Catholic community as being a real contributor to the well-being of this nation and the message of the Catholic faith as one that is of health and good life and real depth of virtue. And Catholics can support this mission of the Pope, obviously by being there, by wanting to be with him and greet him and pray with him, but also showing by the way we do everything the joy that comes with our faith, that quiet inner poise that faith gives us in life, and that openness towards others, that joyful acceptance of others that is its flowering. So we can support the Pope and witness to our faith by the way we live, by the way we behave, and by the way we invite those around us to make the most of these few days of this mission of Pope Benedict to this country. The invitation to take part in this visit is extended to everybody without exception. It is not an invitation simply to the Holy Father to come and visit the Catholics of this country. That invitation would have come from the Catholic Church. But it's an invitation to the people of this country to meet with Pope Benedict, to listen to his witness, to, as it were, relate to him. And he is a profoundly sensitive and intelligent presenter of the message of Christ and of the teaching of the Catholic Church. We now have quite a few months in which to get ready for the visit of Pope Benedict. And I think we prepare for it in a number of different ways. The Holy Father himself asked us to prepare prayerfully. And he called us to be a little more profound in our devotion, in our openness, attentiveness to God. And he promised that he would keep us in his prayers and hold us in his heart. So we must do the same. We must pray for him in his mission, in his journey to this country, and hold him in our hearts. And I think we should also prepare by studying a little more deeply the messages that he will undoubtedly bring to this country. He is the supreme teacher of our faith, and we should look again at the ways in which he teaches about the relevance of faith in our world today through his three great encyclical letters. And they are, of course, to do with faith, hope, and charity. So what better preparation for us than to understand the teaching of Pope Benedict and be ready to receive it anew and afresh. Of course, a very important part of this visit of Pope Benedict will be the beatification of John Henry Newman. And Cardinal Newman was for 30 years a parish priest. And it's lovely that this beatification will come just after the end of this year for priests. And it is a very remarkable moment that an English parish priest is being declared blessed. And this will be, I'm sure, a moment of great encouragement for every priest working in these countries at his parish duties in an unspectacular but very faithful way. That's what Cardinal Newman did for 30 years, and that is a large part of why we can look forward with such pride to his beatification.
Archbishop Vincent Nicholls of Westminster there, head of the Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. And earlier you heard Cardinal Keith O'Brien of Edinburgh and St Andrews, head of the Catholic Bishops' Conference in Scotland. And for full details of Pope Benedict's forthcoming visit, just go to the user-friendly website, which was also launched on Tuesday in London, www.thepapalvisit.org.uk.